John Cohen is a correspondent with Science Magazine and author of several books, including Almost Chimpanzee, Searching for What Makes Us Human, and Rainforests, Labs, Sanctuaries, and Zoos. He spoke recently with Thane Maynard from the Cincinnati Zoo about his interest in wildlife and his recent article called Zoo Futures.
Hi, John Cohen. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, I've read your stuff for years in a variety of magazines and journals, and of course, your book that you're noted for, Almost Chimpanzee. So first off, congratulations on a life that really explores some of the deep questions with wildlife. And I think what prompted this conversation is relatively recently reading your journal article about zoos.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. I've been fortunate to have people who will support me to follow my curiosity.
Exactly. And, you know, your article, Zoo Futures, does a good job reviewing both the history of zoos as well as some of the challenges now that we found ourselves in a largely urban world. Tell a bit about what brought you to investigate zoos, and not just zoos. I know in Almost Chimpanzees, you look at a variety of things.
I'm intrigued by the fact that zoos come out of menageries of the royal courts and then circuses, and that they have this tension between being entertaining and between education and conservation. So that was the genesis of it.
Sure. In fact, many years ago, more than three decades ago, when I got into the zoo business, I was getting out of a master's program and I got a note that the dean wanted me to come see him, and I thought he was going to congratulate me. And he said, "Don't you dare go work at a zoo. It's a cross between a circus and a prison." But I was the only master's student with a job, so I was glad to have it. But I was reminded of that on reading your article.
Yeah, I mean, I love zoos, and I have since I was a kid, and I've seen them change a great deal. And I go to them all over the world. Whenever I'm visiting somewhere, I try to make a point of going to the zoo. And I've had the great fortune to go back room in a lot of zoos and see a lot of stuff that goes on. And I've seen these profound changes occurring. And that's another thing that I was intrigued by and wondering, well, what's going to happen, you know, 100 years from now? Where is the zoo going to go?
Well, you know, as you said in your article, among the challenges for zoos is genetics and small population management. And the fact that I can certainly say in my career, a number of species that people used to regularly see in zoos, you don't see in zoos anymore at all. So I don't personally think it'll go as far as just becoming one scoop of vanilla where every zoo has the same species, but it will be more similar than different, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, there's this history, too, of zoos being sort of this taxonomic Linnaean thing where you go to the zoo and you see everything, and here's every species of this or that. And that's been proven to not be a sustainable thing for zoos. They can't display 1,000 species. It's too much of a challenge to keep those populations breeding. So, you know, as one person I quote in my story says, you know, how many parrots do you need to see? How many species? And I think zoo goers will be satisfied without walking through the taxonomic sort of thing that 100 years ago was really important. And now it's just not so important. You can learn that stuff through Google.
Well, and of course, different zoos have different strengths, different focuses. And I know just from being a zoo director, they have different funding strategies. So zoos that are either extremely well funded, say through taxes like the National Zoo or the St. Louis Zoo, or through tourism like San Diego, they can afford to do a lot of things that you couldn't do in a more typical zoo.
Yeah, and I think funding's at the heart of this dilemma because it's so very expensive to house and breed animals. A lot of zoos like San Diego have turned to big money-making sort of theme park things like 4D theater that purists, you know, find revolting. And the question is, how much do you go toward that theme park that brings in a lot of money versus really doing an education and conservation agenda? And money's at the bottom of it because it's a very expensive thing, as you well know, to run a zoo.
Exactly. And some zoos that can bias particularly strongly toward conservation and education probably have a different funding strategy than others. For instance, the Bronx Zoo, a terrific institution to visit, but a very adult experience, not really a kids' activity center. But also they run more conservation programs through WCS than all other zoos combined.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's an interesting question, too. Why do people come to the zoo? And they come for a variety of reasons. And one of the reasons they come is to meet other humans. And I think that's an interesting aspect, that a zoo is a social meeting place. But the zoos have become so very expensive that for family outings, you know, you have to look at how many people are not accessing zoos who in the past, when it cost 10 cents, could.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, there are still some zoos that are completely subsidized and free. National Zoo is famous for that, but St. Louis is free, Lincoln Park. But you're correct. Most zoos have risen in price as costs have gone up, no doubt about it. Cincinnati Zoo, where I work, is $15. Aquariums can be very expensive because, of course, aquariums are quite expensive to run and maintain, to tell you the truth. But it's an interesting balancing act. I know when I entered the zoo business, and many young people, when they do it because they care about wildlife and conservation. And over time, you do realize in many towns, mostly the zoo is a place for people and families to have some time together outdoors.
Yeah, and, you know, and really a whole lot of people are coming for that charismatic megafauna experience, right? I mean, I think you probably find that true at your zoo. And those are expensive.
Well, you know what's funny? We also have what in 78 was the first major facility for invertebrates, our insectarium, and it still is the largest collection of living insects in America. And it's not inexpensive to take care of either. You know, individually, oh, here's an anthill, here's a beehive. But, you know, you keep 150 species of living insects, and you're going to have a lot of staff to do that.
Is that much of a draw for your zoo?
No, it's not. You're not going to pay any bills on small animals at all, that's for sure. I know what you mean. It is both megafauna and particularly, you know, the top 10 animals that people really get a kick out of seeing. Say, for instance, a family of gorillas interacting, looking a lot like our own families in their hierarchy and antics. That'll carry the day.
I think zoos have another challenge in the future with public relations. Now, they've often benefited from communities. San Diego pays $1 a year leasing fee for prime real estate in Balboa Park. And yet there's sometimes an almost defensiveness about criticism and about public contributions to shaping zoos. And I think that's going to have to change.
Sure. Explore that some more, John. I'm not sure what you mean. I know the idea that as we're more urbanized, we have a different view of nature, but tell us what you're meaning.
Well, a few things. I mean, one thing, I think zoos have become sensitive to the animal rights community and to criticism that they're housing animals the way they're housing it and housing them. And so on the one extreme, you see things like a documentary made about SeaWorld and their treatment of their orcas.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sort of spills over to other zoos where there's a skepticism and a criticism of housing animals, of captive animals. On the other hand, I think zoos can explain why they do this in a way that's reasonable to most people in the public and that they don't have to shy away from that. And it doesn't have to be simply wrapped up in conservation. You know, we keep pets. We keep dogs and cats and all sorts of other animals as pets, and we put them on leashes. You know, how different is a zoo? And I think the more that zoos describe and discuss these things openly and don't shy away from it, the healthier the environment will be. The San Diego Zoo, when I did this story, was very reluctant to let me speak with their architect and the people who were designing the exhibits. And I just found it curious. You know, why behave that way? And I don't think that San Diego Zoo is unique. I think there's a lot of concern about appearances.
Well, certainly negative public pressure can be anything from as a minimum of distraction to really a great challenge. There certainly are parts of the country, parts of the world. Britain's famous for their zoo check program, so it can be pressure that's quote-unquote anti-zoo. I know at Cincinnati Zoo we try to have an open-door policy that if folks from the animal rights community want to come see what we're doing, come on over, and I'm happy to meet with them. And we do. We have a pretty good relationship here in town with folks that are involved in. Of course, as a zoo guy, my take is zoos are in the animal welfare business. We spend at Cincinnati Zoo millions of dollars with a professional staff and lots of preventative medicine, et cetera, taking care of animals. But I do also understand points you're making of, you know, what is that debate going forward? Because the world is changing. For instance, hardly anyone grows up on a farm anymore. And so they have a very different sense of what it takes to manage animals, what it takes to handle them, what it takes to breed them long term and keep them going.
And I imagine your exhibits over time have changed a great deal to become much more similar to what animals are experiencing in the wild. I mean, the San Diego Zoo, you know, has gotten away from cages. Most zoos have to enclosures that are friendlier to the animals, and that's a very positive thing that zoos can sell. Is, you know, look, our exhibits are improving. I imagine your zoo looked different when it opened. than it does today.
Well, it certainly did because it was 141 years ago. And we live in an interesting time. A tremendous amount of money is poured into zoos, both for capital improvements and major changes in growth, depending on the community you're in. So it's a renaissance day in many towns, and that can be a good thing for the community, the visitors, and the animals themselves, with bigger exhibits, more natural exhibits, better substrates for the animals to sleep on, for instance. You know, it's a learning curve. There's still a long way to go.
How many species do you now exhibit?
At our zoo, we have about 500 species.
Wow. And what did you start with, or what was your peak?
You know, our peak is probably about that. We're on our original site, 80 acres right in the city. It's not a thing where the numbers have necessarily grown that much. And as I mentioned, a lot of those are invertebrates, over 100 of those species, and lots of other, you know, smaller reptiles, amphibians, et cetera. But we have a big collection and a big effort and a good history with conservation efforts, both with careful captive breeding and release, but also supportive conservation in the wild. John, thank you very much. Thanks for the work you're doing. It's very thoughtful, and for spending a few minutes with me.
Well, thanks so much. I enjoyed it.
My guest has been John Cohen, author of the book Almost Chimpanzee, Searching for What Makes Us Human in Rainforests, Labs, Sanctuaries, and Zoos. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.
Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Rick Andres. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, up next on 91.7 WVXU.